Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, we're interrupting your podcast for a good reason. Your dog. Every month, BarkBox delivers a brand new collection of toys and treats made just for them. Whether it's fun plush toys from BarkBox or ultra-tough toys from Super Chewer, your dog will get exactly what they want. When you subscribe on Bark.co, they'll double your first box for free. To get your free upgrade, go to Bark.co today.
Hi, I'm Dan Dunn, the host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a show that mixes history, culture, politics, famous people, and booze, and strains it through the cognitive mesh of my sozzled gray matter. Join me each week as I take a lighthearted stroll through the consequential role that alcohol has played through the ages and how it shaped key moments in history, quite literally changing the world. For instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson started the first U.S. wine company in Virginia with investments from George Washington and Ben Franklin? It's true. And if you're wondering whose winery sits across the street from Jefferson's estate today, here's a hint. What's orange? President. And has a very good brain and the best people. I'll also tell you about new stuff to drink, trends, recipes, and other things that are good to know. And I'll chat up celebrities, along with the movers and shakers of the adult beverage world. And since this is a show about alcohol, I'd like to remind you that drinking can cause memory loss. Or even worse, memory loss. Where was I? Oh, right. Plugging my show. It's called What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. It's fun. I promise. So come on, pull up a bar stool and let's kick it.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is actress and friend, Kirsten Warren. I just love her. Talking to her makes me feel good. I think it's going to make you feel good, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal, where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Kirsten Warren. Welcome back to the show, Kirsten.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it only took us 21 minutes to figure out how to do this.
I know. I think I'm primed now for that NASA job. I think I'm just going to go straight to, it turns out I am the hidden figure, okay?
Oh my God, we were just, you know, trying to figure out all of it. Just, you know, we're doing this via Zoom and there was a little bit of an issue, but we figured it out and I'm just so grateful because
thank you. I love talking to you and thank you for like literally like talking me through it. Like, okay.
I needed that too.
That's so funny.
Well, okay. I mean, I do have a bunch of questions for you, but before we even start, you know, I said this to you off mic, but you're like this voice of calm. You have a very calming way about you. I've even seen Kirk posting things alluding to that. And I just, you know, because everything is so insane and so hard to take, I wanted to talk to you for that reason. We're not going to really get into politics. We're just going to talk about fun stuff. We might circle the outside of it, but we're not going to get into any details. And mostly it's just going to be fun. But that's why I wanted you to be on, because you're just calming and I need calm.
Well, that makes me so happy. And I will tell you something that I've been told something like that, mm-hmm. so much so to where I went away this weekend for my friend's bachelorette, but we're of a certain age. So mm-hmm. we're not trying to be that ridiculous. So we just went away for a spa weekend and then had Lebanese food, which was amazing. My favorite in the world. But you went around the table and you had to say something that you were an expert at that maybe people didn't know. And my go-to was, I speak Russian. I follow it. I like try to read a Russian newspaper just to practice my Cyrillic, you know, just because people wouldn't know.
I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that? But then my number one thing that I actually enjoy that is so much a part of my life is I am a caregiver to the people in my life, to my daughter who's 20, my older daughter, and then Kirk, and I call them my like NICU newborns. Like they're so needy in the best way, but it's because I've created those little monsters too.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, you've just got that way.
I enjoy it. I want to hear what's going on and I want to talk through everything, you know, 14 times. It's just kind of who I am.
and then you take care of the little fear, what do you call him? Feral, what?
Oh, Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell, my feral kitty, you'll be happy to know, is in the garage right now because it's rainy outside. He's so close to letting me pet him, but he's just like those boyfriends when you were in your early 20s that just can't handle it. Like they come really close to you and then you reach out and then they hiss at you and scratch at you and you're like, what happened? I love you. And you're chasing their car as they're driving away. Bad relationship, but I love him.
Well, you know, it's funny. I have to share. I'm watching my mom's cats right now. And so they came over. It's two of them, Simon and Jesse. He's the boy. Simon's the boy. He's so incredibly cute. He's like the cutest cat I've ever seen. And he's so
kind.
He's just like, I think you've seen this picture. He's kind of like white. And then he's got the tabby pieces. And they're different.
Color
tabby pieces.
I just wanted to figure out which one he was.
Yes. Yeah. And she's all black. And so... and it was so funny because when they were kittens, I had said to my mother, Jesse's really smart. Simon, not so much. and Simon is just all love. And
that's
so
Booby. That's our Booby. He's just around my neck all the time. He just wants to lay there and purr.
And I love him so much. He's so cute. Booby, and so, but when they first got here, you know, obviously they're out of their element and they're all freaking out and everything. And so I was having a really hard time because it was like he was becoming aggressive with Jesse and he just kept hissing and he was clearly scared. And so I decided. And this is, you know, I'm thinking of this with Colin Farrell. I decided, and I already know you do all of this, but I thought, all right, I've been here before where I've dealt with, you know, cats that feel traumatized and, you know, whatever the thing. So I'm just going to, and I was kind of like feeding in that energy because I was allowing his fear to upset me. And and so I thought, I got to stop this because he's feeding off of me. And so I just thought, I'm going to be really strong and love him. And so, you know, there are things that both my mom and I say to him. We talk about his big boy paws and we call him Little Mitter Man and we do all. So I started using the phrases that I knew he knew. And it was so funny because you could see where I would say those, like I would say, you look at your big boy paws. And he would, like his eyes got so sweet and then he would remember he'd be scared. So it was like he was battling. It was like the little soul that was all loving and then the little animal who was all afraid. And I could see it.
Yeah, no,
and
I deal with that. So what you're saying is I should not be inwardly thinking, please don't kill me as I like crawl towards him with face to his paws. It's like, because I have, it's like he wants to be petted. He walks right towards me and he's talking, chirping.
Oh.
And I'll be like, well, hi. And then I'll start to pet his head and he will.
And then he freaks out.
Freak out and slash. And then I have like, and it hurts. You know, like you get, so you're kind of scared. And I don't want to approach him with big oven mitts because that actually looks scarier. So wish me luck.
I will. And I'll send love his way. But eventually, I mean, Simon knows me. So it took a few hours and that's different because he knows me. But
well, he's
now,
definitely a part of our family because when talking about ever leaving this house, Kirk actually said, well, we have to be here for a couple more years because Colin Farrell has to decide if he's going to come in or if he's going to be a part of the land. Like so we're stuck in this house for a while. Oh, that's the wheel. Ripley's on her wheel.
Oh,
fun.
Well, I just love how Kirk is like Mr. Alpha, but then he's just a sucker for the cats.
A sucker. Like, he will be visibly hurt if Ripley's napping with me, like laying on me. Like you could just see it. It's like his girlfriend is talking to someone else. He's just like hurt.
That's so funny. Well, and it's also funny with these two cats. They're not so familiar with Bob, right? They know him, but they're not so familiar. And the other night, I came out of the bathroom and Bob was in bed and both cats were in bed with him and Simon was up against his leg and Jezzy was kind of just laying there and Bob was petting her. And I took a picture and sent it to my mom and I'm like, they're fine. But it's just cute because Bob is an animal person, but he, you know, Bob is 6'4". And so
that's tall. Yeah.
He's just massive. He's a massive man. So it's like he's this big man and these cats are used to women. So it took him a minute, but I think we're all calming down, although they did keep me up last night. And for all we know, they will interrupt the show, but that's okay. But
mine have already interrupted the show like 10 times. So I didn't know that was the goal. I'll move to another room.
Ripley, well, we love the animals on this show, so Ripley. Any interruption is fine, as long as they're not fighting and hurt.
No, they're not. They're
but you, the last time that you were on the show, you were talking about the book, I Wish I Were an Ocelot, Adventures of an Essential Kitten. So, number one, I want to hear a little bit. I want you to talk about the schools that ordered that book, and then also just, is there anything else going on? What's come of that book?
Yes, that's interesting. And thank you for circling back to that book. It's Balls in My Court, because we want to do a series of them. Oh, wow. And we want to include her brother with his polydactyl paws. Like,
little booby.
You know, I'm a little bit different. We want to take it that way. Mm-hmm. At first, when I was developing the book, I wanted it to be a sensory book for all kids, and that it would have scents and smells and, you know, like the Pat the Bunny book almost, because it was so fun. We didn't have time or money to develop it that way. So we went, but what I found was so many teachers were getting in touch with me saying that their TK, transitional kindergarten, and then also every kid that they had on the spectrum was really responding to the book, wants to come up and kiss her afterwards. And I also sent it to a school in Japan where I used to work.
Right.
Because the Japanese language, it's hard as an adult speaker to speak English to differentiate those R's and L's. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't realize going in, it wasn't my intention, but a happy coincidence that there are so many R's and L's in I Wish I Were an Ocelot with Thunder Paws
and Ripley.
Lancelot and Ripley. And then the video that we produce that comes along with it through that little hyperlink, it tells them how to say it. So it's kind of a tutorial, and kindergartens liked it. So it got on people's lists over there, teachers like helping their little ones learn English. And so I got the cutest videos of a couple little children, you know, saying, you know, I wish I would an Ocelot with Thunder Paws. So cute.
My God.
Yeah. One grandma sent me her granddaughter saying it and was like, oh, please. And I said, can I use it like to promote the book? Yeah. And then she said, absolutely. And then the mother said, absolutely not. So, there's that little dance of, oh, absolutely. You know, you kind of need their permission, Nana. You know? So we laughed about that. But that's ultimately where I would like to take it in like an or academic, but primary academics in all languages, and then would like to get it into television as like a poetry minute in between children's programming on something.
Sprout,
the Nickelodeon, you know, like
a
little poetry minute where we would produce one, you know, a month, a week, I don't know, whatever they need, and put them out because they're just fun, little sing-songy, heavily syncopated rhyming. Heals your soul, turns out. Like when you read a good poem and with that fun little beat and those heavy rhymes, it's fun. And it kind of cures you, like a hug, you know, for children. So we'd like to do more of those. And I just had a blast doing them.
Well, I think the whole world needs that right now. We need a hug. The whole world needs a hug.
Well, kind of like how after the Depression became the sensation that was Shirley Temple. Because you need it. You're primed. You're primed for, oh my God, just something super cute and sweet. Yes. I don't want to think.
Totally. Oh my God.
So I may be in animal.
I need to know. I need to know though, why do you know Russian?
I know. Я знаю по-русски.
Здравствуйте, как дела?
Я рада вас по московскому дому.
You know, you know it. I only know. I know. I can say things like сколько стоит, and я знаю, где КГБ.
Oh, you're funny. I studied it on purpose. I was a gymnast when I was 11, 12, 13, and just it was dominated by the Eastern Bloc countries. So I just became fascinated with, even though it was the time of Nadia Comăneci and Romanian, I kind of just locked on to the Russian. I don't know, to tell you the truth.
So fascinating.
Just that a language is so all-encompassing and super hard to commit to. So you'd better love it. So
No kidding.
I do, and I don't know why.
That's
interesting. I just went after it and then started taking it and tutors, and I would join classes. And it was a fun thing to pursue with my head when so much of my world was emotional, acting, you know, like putting your emotions out there. So this was a one academic thing I could pursue when I wasn't on location, or when I was on location, I could take my books with me.
Yeah.
I could do, you know, classes, and that's what I did. And I just kind of went trolling for Russian friends, you know, and made them. I like the one teacher that I had quit when she had a baby, but we just stayed friends. And I don't know. I don't know how to answer that, except it just, it picks you. I think if you're really supposed to, there's one culture or language that calls to you, like, I just really want to learn it. And like I said, it's really hard.
Yeah,
so you have to really want to. So I can read it, I can write it, but fluent, absolutely not. I cannot argue politics, thank God, in Russian. I'd be pushed off a building, I'm pretty sure, if I had that talent. So I just kind of, you know, read Russian newspapers so that I can see how much of it before I hit the translation, you know, see how correct I am. And it's little games. Some people do Sudoku, you know, to keep their mind fresh. And I try to see, I listen to Russian music, you know.
Fascinating.
Chicharina. I like her. Chicharina.
I don't know who that is.
You're okay. You won't once you... It's just my thing.
Well, you know, I mean, I lived there in the 80s. And I
remember that.
Yes. And so it's like, when I say, Я знаю, где КГБ, that's, I know where the KGB is. And
that's so funny.
I used to go to the guards who were standing outside of the American embassy, and I hated them because they, aside just because they were, I viewed them as an enemy. And this was Soviet Russia. But I don't
know.
I don't know if you or if I even told you, but there was the Pentecostal family who had run into the embassy looking. They wanted to practice their religion, and of course, at the time, they weren't allowed. So they
were being persecuted. Yeah.
Yeah. So they ran into the embassy. I think one of them got shot, but I think there was seven of them living in this one room. We actually got our cat from them, Hawkeye, and then Yazik was Hawkeye's sister and went to Ann Garrels, who was the bureau chief for ABC News at the time. But anyway, so I used to go visit the Pentecostal family, and their room looked out like on the main street where the embassy was, and that's where the guards were. So every summer, the guards would build like fires in front of their window, and every winter, they would put mounds of snow. And so I, you know, was primarily there in the wintertime, and I would go kick those mounds of snow, and then, you know, like kick the mounds
of
snow.
What was that? What was the purpose of the mounds
of
snow?
Just to be assholes. They knew the Pentecostals were there. And so that's why my friend and I used to constantly bother them. And I would, you know, I would walk up to them with my 12-year-old geek self and my like Coke bottle glasses and speak to them in Russian and tell them where I knew where the I was like, I know where the KGB headquarters is. And they would just look at me like, you stupid child.
I got Kirk to say that because it sounds so good coming out of his mouth. So he'll look at me and he speaks no Russian at all, but he'll go, Slusha Minya. Makes me laugh. And then I'll be like, Что? What do you need?
And, and you have a good accent. My Russian teacher told me that I had no accent. It sounds like you don't have one. And it's funny because have you ever seen the show For All Mankind?
No.
Okay, it's really a fascinating show, but it's kind of like an alternative universe if the Russians had gotten to the moon first. And in this kind of alternative universe, we did pass the Equal Rights Amendment, and it's really a good show. But there's a woman in it who is from the South, and she goes to Russia and she's speaking Russian. And it's so funny because I can hear her Southern accent in the Russian. And
that's funny. That's hilarious.
It's like interesting to me because I know that I'm pretty good at accents. You know, I've always had an ear for them.
You're a good parrot. Most actors are. If you've ever done ADR, you kind of have to listen to something and parrot how it sounded on the day because it was probably a year ago and you've forgotten and you're trying to match the sound. And most actors are good parrots.
Yeah. And so there's that. But anyway, now I'm going to switch back. Now I know Scarlett went to school. I want to talk a little about her. I can't remember where she went to school, so I want you to tell everybody. And then I know she's an actor now and she's been in movies, so I just want to know all about that.
Oh my goodness. So the launching of Scarlett, like God bless those kids who decided to launch any career at the head of the start of the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, when everything shut down. She went away to do a summer program at RADA. Mm-hmm. At the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London.
Wow.
Because she was just really young at the time. She graduated at 17. And RADA, they had like 2-year programs, and you could only join their program if you were legally 18, because they don't have dorms. You have to rent an apartment.
Mm.
None of that we felt comfortable about sending our 17-year-old over to just like rent a flat, you know, on her own in London. So I went over with her, and my older daughter lives there. So it was really nice to just be there for, you know, the whole summer and let her study over there. And yet the programs here, like say, if she went to a Juilliard program, they're mostly stage.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to figure out how much of that she would use in film, you know, like for film auditions. Like you would graduate from a program like that if you're getting in and then get out and then have to like readjust yourself. And what would that do? And she didn't want to leave home. She was like, I don't want to. So we supported her going to London to do this program and then come back and study here and start auditioning. That's what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
She got the lead in a film, in a horror film called Traction Park Massacre.
And, awesome.
I know. And I think I think it'll come out in October or something. Mm-hmm. But she's one of the leads and she's just very excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then auditioning for things that are huge. But yet, you know, it's like it's different to me. I think that, I mean, I have no issue with my own personal looks. I never have. They've never gotten in the way. You know what I mean? I always liked the way I looked, but I never felt like I was treated a certain way only because of how I looked.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. So
let's just say this. Like, I feel Scarlett has gifts of just natural beauty that Kirk and I like feel like we don't know how we give birth, like this child. Like she's that person. And she does nothing. Like she's possibly the messiest, doesn't take a shower, like doesn't do a thing. And then walks in and turns around. But it's really cute. So she's in that world of, it'll be very interesting the next couple jobs she lands, because what she's getting close to, which I can't divulge because it's, you know, not fair to the people who got it and the comparing and contrasting of, you know, whatever. But she's got a really good emotional take on it all because Kimberly, she don't care.
Yeah, that's the best.
She doesn't
that's
care.
The best. Yeah.
She doesn't care. And
wow.
Or she'll come close on something and, you know, the casting directors will be like, oh my God, she was our choice and she's just our discovery and da 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 da. And her manager's trying to like console her and Scarlett's like, I never understand that because, yay, I got close. But it doesn't
right.
matter. It's to her, it's all like monopoly jobs or money. It just doesn't really matter.
Wow.
And she got the film. And then, oh, I'm divulging way too much. But then she decided, we literally found her in her room, very upset, and she wanted to back out of it.
Wow.
She didn't want to do it because she liked her life the way it was.
How interesting. That's amazing, and that's perfect. That really is the best way to be.
And then she's just like, she doesn't like change in any way. And that we know. I mean, one day she came home from school in the fourth grade and I had literally just moved her bed to like a diagonal coming out of the corner and it gave her all this free space, burst into tears.
Aww.
Why would you do that? She doesn't like change. So
yeah.
That's what that was about. And by day's end, she was thrilled that she was going away and she had the best time and made lifelong friends and all that stuff. But that I just know who she is. So the fact that the status quo is going to stay the status quo for another week, well, she's not going to mourn that. she's hilarious because I think how badly I wanted things.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that must have been my first mistake, you know?
Wow. Well, you know, I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, I've talked a lot. I have another podcast about manifesting, and that's kind of like, you know, we manifest our experience by who we believe we are, what we believe is possible for us, and basically who we think we are, and or who we're being. And so, you know, I mean, I can go back and look on my experience, and I can see where I had confidence and strength. And it paid off and it played out. And then I can also see where I either wanted it too much or I had insecurities or whatever it was. And those played out. Like one
You're
of the
hilarious.
Things, well,
I have to say, I have to tell you something.
Huh.
So I wrote a screenplay and sent it to an agent that I used to, a literary agent a long time ago that I knew. And he immediately hit me back and was like, I love this idea. Let's revisit it. So I went in, had a meeting. My sister, being funny, sends me the video of Sound of Music. I have confidence. And I hit it. And I'm waiting in the outer office. And this comes up. And, you know, all these people coming, walking by, doing their normal, like, business in this very hoity-toity, high-end agency. Here's me getting my message from my sister of, I have confidence. It was very funny, and I sat and laughed, and so did the receptionist.
I'm sure. Well, yeah, I mean, that's, I did, like, I used to say all the time, Hollywood doesn't know what to do with me. And then I would see it play out. It would, you know, I got an audition for Third Rock from the Sun, and I might have told you this before, but I think you'll understand what I'm talking about. So, you know, Kristen Johnston clearly was the lead of that show, and she and I were so similar because I auditioned to be her stand-in at one point, but we're both 6 feet tall. You know, we were both these blonde bombshell types, and so very similar. I will say, though, she's like a bazillion times more talented than I am as far as, you know, the humor. She's fucking amazing. And I have no problems. I was good, but you know, the Kristen is just amazing. But anyway, so
I would say what she is very particular, and that's the flavor that they wanted.
Yes, she is very particular. Yes.
It's very, very, if they want her, they did not want you. And if someone wanted you, she would not be right for that role. It
You're
has
right.
to be a glove that fits.
And
I
totally
would be very
get that.
Careful of like not talented or not this.
That,
I didn't
you're
have,
right.
Stop it.
You're
stop
right.
It.
But she'll
I
go
won't...
far. She would go far. Like, I think her instinct was to go, like, it reminds me of Chris Farley, where Chris Farley would just fucking do anything. And she'll just like fearless. And I think
she is
at
fearless.
The time.
She is fearless.
Yeah. At the time I was maybe a little fearful. I think I could have been with some more time in the industry, I probably could have gotten out of that. But anyway, so I got called for an audition for Third Rock. And it wasn't for her. I mean, I just was supposed to be a stand-in for her, and I blew that on purpose because I didn't want to be anybody's stand-in. But then I auditioned for, her name was Gail Pillsbury. She was the one who did the, she was the casting director for that show. She came into my acting studio.
I know. Yeah.
And she loved me. And I did a really good job, and she called me straight to producer, which for everybody else, it means that you just bypass the whole auditioning process with the casting director. You go right to the producer, do the scenes for them. So I was called in for two different characters. One was to be this kind of sweet girlfriend of French Stewart, very sweet. And then another one was when they were at a restaurant, like a diner, it was a woman waitress who, when Kristen's character was complaining about men, the line that I read was something like, "Don't worry, honey, there's other fish in the sea." And so I saw these two roles and I thought, okay, the sweet girl for French Stewart, they're going to hire somebody who's tiny and looks sweet. And I don't look sweet. I can be sweet, but I don't look sweet. And then I thought, they're going to hire an old woman for the waitress. They're not going to hire basically, you know, the person who is very much like the lead speaking to that lead. It didn't make sense to me. And that's, of course, who they cast. They got this really sweet, young-looking girl. I mean, I was young, but she looked very young and sweet for the French Stewart girlfriend. And then, of course, they hired somebody who was probably in her 60s to play the waitress. So, I would see that play out for me because I think I believed it. You know, I believed that about myself. And I put out that energetic thing to the world. You know, like, you guys don't know what to do with me. And they just didn't.
That's funny. See, I would actually think that it would be terribly funny with you. It's just a different way of looking at it. You and French Stewart, because you're taller than him. And I would have played it like you're looking for him and then you look down. Like, oh, there you are. Oh, wee lamb kind of thing, which is just a whole other way they could have gone. But like you said, it's just a flavor.
Yes.
And it is just your artist's, you know, what you create. Your artist or your artistic illusion. It's a painting. And so when quote unquote rejections happen, it's just your particular playlet. Your illusion is what the rejection in you, it helps me never personalize it. For some reason, I never think anything is my fault.
You know, in acting, I always used to think when people would say there's so much competition, I hated hearing that because I felt like, well, sure, there's a lot of people who want to be an actor and an actress, but nobody is going to bring what I can bring. And the same goes for all those other people. And yeah, there might be a number of people up for one role and only one's going to get it. But as you said, they're looking for a flavor and you either have it or you don't. And so it's, you know, I mean, and sometimes it's just all politics. It's all Hollywood politics.
Can I tell you a really sad story?
Sure.
Okay, single mom. I'm in North Hollywood, living in a little apartment, you know, get the lead for Good Advice, a Shelley Long sitcom. And I was to be the receptionist at her, you know, she was a therapist and a marriage therapist, but she's going through a divorce. It was funny. She's super talented. I remember, you know, who I was going out with at the time coming and going, why is she so good at this? Because she is. I came out dressed like I had no choice. I didn't dress myself. You know, when you're like back there getting jobs, it's not like you had any power to say, oh, I'm not wearing that. I'm wearing a tiny little plaid Japanese anime Sailor Moon skirt, right? with like pinafore type things and a blouse, you know? And I came out and the look on Shelley Long's face, I was fired right after the pilot and recast with a 60-something-year-old woman.
There you go.
And they ran a story in the Inquirer about everybody noticing the first run-through.
when I walked out in the tiny little skirt that I had no choice in picking,
right?
Just doing my job and trying to be my funniest. Mm-hmm. And I could feel her being resistant. Mm-hmm. Like we would have like a tussle over a nightgown that she bought and I'm supposed to hold it up. And I still remember the line. I'm like, wow, this is so sexy. It doesn't even need a woman in it. You know, and I just hold it up like that. And everybody's tittering and she turned and she goes, this isn't working for me. Like I find her so resistant to the humor I'm trying to do. And I'm like, what fuck did I do? Can I say that on the line?
Of course you can.
What, like I'm just like, I don't know what I did.
Yeah.
And she of course heard about the story that was running and called me off and on for the next couple years saying that that was not the case.
Wow.
Meanwhile, I'm like, so the producer called to let me know that I wasn't going to be. And I'm like, oh, that's all right. You know, Danny Jacobson, that's fine. I'll just find a nice orphanage for my daughter. Thanks anyway.
Oh my God.
And he was like, ouch. You know, but still they let that happen. We have no control is what you know early on. And I say all that not to say, because I got other jobs after that that I was probably destined to get. That mm-hmm. helped make who I am, and I mm-hmm. love my life. So you cannot look backwards. But that particular day, it felt like, oh, happy dagger. That was an injustice. That wasn't necessary.
No.
You know, because it wasn't as though the other woman they recast me with wiped the floor with me comedically. Mm-hmm. You know, it would have mm-hmm. been different if you would. It was like, no, she did not want that color next to her. Yeah. And I always remember Murphy Brown and Candace Bergen, whom I adore, mm-hmm. said when they were casting her show, they were bringing people in, and she finally turned to them and said, you don't need to cast down around me.
Wow.
To make me like the brightest thing on the buffet. I want you to bring your funniest, your cutest, your brightest, wow. your...
And I we love got- her.
We got Corky Sherwood and we got her man, her like, you know what I mean, her boss and these really talented people. And for whatever reason, and you know what, maybe I wasn't as funny as I thought I was on Good Advice, but I'm just telling you, that's the way the story went down. And that's the way other people saw it that mm-hmm. thought, you know, oh God, I got to go make a secret phone call to somebody and tell them. Cause it certainly, you know, wasn't me, but it hurt on the day.
I bet. And
when you're trying your darndest to like raise a daughter and get a job and get out there, and then you win the job and then lose the job, you know.
Yeah, basically because of ego. I mean, there's
that's the way it felt.
Of course it was ego, and that's how it goes. I mean, it was funny because obviously all these years later I wound up connecting with Kristen, and you know, obvious, I don't believe she had anything to do with the decision making where I was concerned. She is super cool. I just think it was the producers. And it was funny because the first job that I ever got was I think I had signed up to do a thing with this company where if you got three auditions with union job, or I'm sorry, three auditions, or you booked like an extra or something with a union job, it would qualify you to get your SAG card. Cause you know, it was really hard to get a SAG card. So I did this.
I know you would be SAG eligible.
Exactly. And so the first job that I got, I was hired as a bit. It was a bit part for Mad About You. And then it was crazy because it literally was the first thing I'd ever done. And I got to the set early. And so bit player, I had no lines. I was just going to be featured and for in a scene because I was tall. And I got there and this girl was an extra who I was in like eighth and ninth grade with, which was just weird.
Funny.
That was so funny.
Like,
and then they told me when I got there, they're like, well, we're going to replace you with basically the producer's niece or whatever. So she got the featured bit part. But the funny part about it was I got all the airtime. So, I didn't have any lines. I was just kind of, I went back down to extra, I guess. And the next day after the show aired, I was at my bank and somebody recognized me because they knew me. Like if you were a stranger on the street, you would have known. But she was like, were you on Mad About You last night? So I was like, there you go. I got a, I got the recognition that, you know, was so fun to get for me at the time because I had never done anything.
Well, you get better recognition at the bank than I do. I showed up one day. Let me tell you this story. I showed up at the bank with like some commercial residual check that desperately had to be deposited or like your rent would bounce. And I'm standing in line looking like I just wore what was within reach radius of my bed, jumped up, took my daughter to school and then went to the bank. And I looked like Satan's ass crack. Okay. And I'm standing in line and the person in front of me at the window is suddenly and immediately surrounded by cops. Like, oh, guns drawn.
Wow.
And based on how I looked, they turn to me and go, "Are you with him?" Like, hands up, like, oh, God, no.
Oh, my God.
And it just reminds me of something my mother used to always tell me. So anyway, you get good attention at the bank. I do not.
That's hilarious. Oh, my God.
My mom used to say, and she was just being really honest. I don't think she meant it for like the curse or the like hex that it would be. She would say, "You can look, Kirsten, better than anyone or worse than anyone, depending." And I still laugh at that, mostly because it's true. It's just so true. Like, yikes.
I don't know. I've looked pretty bad before.
My sister will still midday any given year call me to laugh about that bank story.
Oh, like, my God, that's so funny.
Are you with him, you criminal miscreant? Of course. Look at you. Look at the hair.
Of course. Of course. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we have to take a really quick break, but we will be back after this message. Hey, this is Kimberly real quick. If you're having a good time, enjoying the show, and you want to support me, please visit patreon.com/startmeup. Check out the tiers and support me today. Thank you in advance. Okay, we're back. I want to talk to you now about Pamela Anderson. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what your opinion is, but okay. So recently, she was at the Met Gala and she she was sporting a new hairstyle. And, you know, she's all into this whole natural thing now. She's not really wearing makeup, or if she does wear makeup, it's not the obvious makeup. Yeah. And so, not surprisingly, a lot of people, specifically men, are going after her and saying how she looks dumpy and ugly. And I think on the one of the rags, maybe it was the Daily Mail, talking about how she's not the vixen she used to be in the 90s. Well, hello, she's 57. But, you know, and that she looked dumpy or whatever. And it's really starting to piss me off, because I will say, and I want to get your full opinion on this, but my take on her was always, I mean, I never really cared about her either way. I didn't hate her. I didn't love her. I recognized what her role was. And I know that she was like a sexual object thing. And she played into that. Clearly she played it up, but it looks like now, you know, as she's gotten older, I think she's starting to, and I've seen some interviews with her, you know, I mean, she doesn't want to do that anymore. And I certainly don't hold it against her for the way she was accepted in this world, which was, you know, very sexualized. I don't blame her for that, because I think if it were me and I were in her position at her age, I don't know that I would have done anything differently. I mean, I might have.
Well, those were the jobs she was going to get. I have to tell you, she was not going to go get the lead in Sophie's Choice.
No.
She was never going to get that job. So she was operating in the world where she found it, and she was trying to make a living. And producers only want to let you do what you did last time.
Yes.
And they bring you in for that. No more than, like, I would never get the lead in her TV show, but rather be called in for every character that had her foot in a bucket, you know, like walking in. It's just what they see you as. But I totally understand her. And I just submit to the world at large, how long are we beholden to look sexy, sexy for you?
Yeah.
Why is that my job at 60 or 57, 59, 72? How long do we have to like sit and chronicle the, well, you don't look like what you did in your third grade picture? Who fucking does? Who does? And yet, here's the art within the woman holding the ketchup bottle, inside the ketchup bottle, inside the ketchup you look in. The guy writing that story is only trying to get paid for clickbait. Oh my God, stuff. He's just operating in the world as he finds it. And because people are going, well, I thought it was Mia Farrow the first time I saw her at the Met Gala. And I was like, so what? It's like a little prim little haircut. What are they freaking out about? It's cute. What do you mean, milkmaid? Like, what are you
Oh,
talking? I don't know very many, like, whatever. Like, I just would like to see the person who wrote it
God.
to submit pictures of every late 50s woman in their personal life and hold them up for public ridicule.
Yes, exactly.
I would love that. Like the 10 women in your life, the aunties and the moms and the whoever is 57, just because you once worked in this business, that you have to be like, oh, you look like this now. Leave her alone.
Well, and
She
she's
don't.
really coming into herself. She's being au naturel in every way. She's growing her own foods. I think
Well,
she's a
she's
vegan.
finding her voice. And if
Yes.
she doesn't want to be Barbarella anymore, and by the same token, then as desperately as Madonna keeps trying to stay
Yeah.
au courant, she gets butchered for that.
It's so true. Yeah, no matter
So
what
it's
you
like
do.
she's trying to like put that away. We don't want to see that. You're 60, blah, blah, blah. And then when you put on a cute apron and decide you don't want eyelash extensions, they're like, what happened to her? You know, it's like, you know what? I should have robbed the bank with the guy ahead of me. And I probably could have had that Bonnie and Clyde life that I'm destined to, because you can't win. So I think in the end, the bigger lesson is just stop trying.
Right. Well,
Stop it and
that
live
is
your
the
life
winning. Yeah, that's the
and
winning because
stop
you're making that
clicking.
choice.
Stop clicking, stop reading, stop buying into, and just know that they're idiots. They know they're idiots because, trust me, they go home and go, my mom's that age. And you know what? Pammy, kind of cute. You know, she's really adorable. And if that was your mom or your nana, wouldn't you be thrilled? You'd be
Yes,
like,
I
look
mean,
at
it's
that hottie.
ridiculous. It's
So
just so
stupid.
maddening because I feel like, I mean,
She
obviously, I.
was. She
Go
was
ahead.
supposed to go to the Met Gala like rollerblading in a thong. Get the fuck out of here. Like, stop.
Well, what's really funny is I auditioned to be, what was the name of her show? Oh, remember she had that show. It was a TV show, and I just can't think of it. I can never remember the name of it.
Lifeguarding show?
No, not Baywatch. It was after that. It was kind of
I
like
don't
a,
know.
I think she was supposed to be like a detective or something. I don't know. But it was funny because I auditioned for her show.
I'm
I
not
got
laughing at her. I'm just laughing at
I got
the
called
idea.
straight to the producer on this one, and it was to play a Russian, like a Russian spy woman, which I thought was funny because we, you know, of our conversations. But I will just say about that audition, I went in and, or no, it wasn't, that's right. It was a general audition, and I went in, and there were all these women who looked like Pamela Anderson, and then there was me, and I didn't look anything like her. I didn't dress like her because I had lived in Russia, and I figured, all right, I got to be this like ice queen spy Russian woman. And so I walked in and it was like this guy alone. And he says, I said to him, I'm like, would you like for me to do a Russian accent? And he was like, well, only if you can. And I was like, step aside. So I do my scene and I'm really good. And and he looks at me and he's like, can you come back and meet the producers in an hour? So I was like, sure. So I go down to my car and I'm literally like reading the Thomas map guide in
Yeah,
a
where
Russian
were you,
accent the
by the
whole
way? I
time.
need to know which studio so I can get a
I wasn't,
visual.
it was somewhere on Wilshire Boulevard. It
Oh,
was,
okay, I was
I
like, it
don't know.
wasn't Sunset Gower or
No,
something like that.
it was like some, it was some office building. And so I'm down there like on Wilshire Boulevard reading my Thomas map guide saying, you know, everything in a Russian accent. I go back up and there's like five men and they're all sitting there. And then there's just me alone, kind of like the Sharon Stone thing, you know, like it's just me by myself. And I do the audition and they applauded me. I mean, who gets applauded and then nothing?
Me?
VIP.
Me?
VIP Me? Was the name of the show.
VIP, I remember that. I yeah, do remember that.
That was the name of the show. But I never got called for
anything. Test for so many of those things and wouldn't get them because, like, we bring four. It's like you beat out hundreds of girls and then you test and you have a 1 in 4 chance of getting it because there are 4 of you testing. And I would come in and be like, oh, where's that spot in the carpet that I always stand by? And they would laugh. And I had like my little banter because you're just so used to doing that. You're like, oh, hey, hi. How are the kids? How are the twins?
Yeah, I didn't get that far. I didn't know anybody. The only people I knew were the Days of Our Lives people. They kept hiring me. But outside of that, that's all I knew. But that's cool. I don't need that anymore. You know, I mean, when I left the industry, it was in 1999, and I didn't really ever look back. I mean, I never regretted leaving. It was just I didn't want it anymore. You know, I just didn't care. And I mean, I think if I would have been offered something, I would have taken it. But I can genuinely say that I don't think I would have done very well, depending on what I, knowing me and my insecurity about my physical appearance, I think it would have been too much for me. I think I was hard enough on myself without being successful. I think if I was successful, I don't know. I might have entered really dangerous territory. So,
well, it doesn't change like at whatever level. I remember being in Wilmington doing Yaya Sisterhood with Ashley Judd and all those girls, and we're in the back room like having dinner, and we got a lot of attention for being there in Wilmington, and people came over, and this man came back and wanted to meet Ashley and gave us his car, and we were like heckling him, like, don't do it, don't walk over, don't do it. And he put his card down, and he was a therapist for like eating disorders, and we all just started busting out laughing because it was hilarious, because you're like a bunch of actresses, like, you knew where to make your money.
No kidding.
It was hilarious. But that's it, there's so much pressure for you know, food issues, and I was both a gymnast and then an actress. So it's like both weighed by coaches and then into that. So I just didn't even have the capacity to enjoy a piece of pie for the longest time.
Wow. Yep. Wow. Yeah, I would enjoy it, but then I would feel the intense guilt. But mostly what I did was I just didn't eat enough. So, you know, I mean, and now it's like, it's great because hitting, I don't know if this is really considered middle age. Am I going to live to be 114? I don't think so. But, you know, hitting this age, because like I said, I'm 57, everything's different now. You know, my body's different. It looks different. I'm not, I don't know how you are. This will be the last thing we talk about, but I don't love it. You know, I definitely, like, I'm okay with everything, but right now my arms are kind of the bane of my existence. But I'm starting to just process it and dealing with the fact that, all right, my body's changing. And on one hand, I feel relieved because I had spent so much of my youth just feeling like I had to be the perfect version of myself and weigh a certain amount and look a certain way. And now that I'm, you know, older, I feel like, all right, I don't need to be so concerned. I may never have needed to be, but I was. But I don't feel that urge to be quite as concerned. It's definitely like muscle memory coming back and going, oh, look at your arms. But there's also, it's like, who cares? You know, I mean, a very happy relationship.
Who cares is right. That's good. Who cares is right. There's balance to your life. And if you want to fix arms, you just use light weights. You just go into weight and you can fix all that in 2 or 3. It just becomes less important.
Right.
I promise you, if it was really important to you, you would do that. People do what they want to do.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you truly want to fix your arms, you eat a lot of protein, you pick up some 10-pound weights or 5-pound weights.
I am. I'm doing
and
that.
And you do a regimen. Yeah, you do that. But who cares? What I want back, because we're like very similar in age. Mm-hmm. What I want back is some of my gymnastic tricks.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I want my walkovers back. Mm-hmm. I want to do front and back walkovers. I used to be like a handstand queen.
I never could do that.
30 seconds. I could do split handstand. And I want those back.
Yeah.
But I want to be careful not to get injured in the process. So
yes, very important.
You know, so because then you can't do it at all. But that's what I want back more than like, oh, a way that I used to look. I want to continue discovering who I am and evolving. and changing and meeting, like becoming a new person. You know, it's like as actors, you come to the breakfast table as a new person. It feels like every day. Well, that's even the look. Like, who can I, you know, morph into? It's fascinating. It's just a new little butterfly.
It is. And I think you're right. I mean, I have absolutely, in the last 5 years, I've been putting so much more focus on literally who I am. And it's so much more exciting than anything that, you know, you could do. I did, you know, my sister got married in 2023. And it was April, the end of April, we went to go try on dresses. And I just almost died. I couldn't believe it. And I went on a diet immediately. And so I did exactly what you want, higher protein, used the weights, did all that stuff. And I wound up, I think it was like 4 months, I lost about 17 pounds.
Yeah, and you do. Then, you do. Yeah.
And then I know, like after the election, I didn't start eating. Like I didn't move into stuffing my face, but I gained a lot of weight. And I think I know why. I just think I figured it out. Because for 6 weeks after the election, I had a rock in my stomach, and I think it was cortisol. I think that I was so freaked out and so stressed out, and it was just so much cortisol. And it, you know, if any of you don't know about cortisol, read up on it. When you're an older woman, it's not your friend.
It can make you
gain weight, and that's what happened to me. So I'm back to not quite as aggressive as I was doing it back in 2023, but I'm doing my workouts.
Running raises your cortisol, which they tell you, and you're like, wait, what? So you think you're, you know, Kirk's workouts cannot be my workouts.
Right.
I do better doing somersaults in the grass and a few push-ups and some weights and being done in 20 minutes than I do going out and trying to run 5 miles. And then walking my dog, I'll get my steps in, but it's walking my dog.
Kirk is he's constantly working out.
yeah.
And he looks like he is. I mean, he's very, very, very fit.
I am in awe of his dedication to that really does that. Yeah. Like, just in awe. What he can do is what everybody wants to be able to do. He can do pull-ups with a weighted vest.
Wow.
I don't know if I can do one real quick.
I couldn't do one. I'm
happy with my girl push-ups. I think I'm the bee's knees, you know? So it's like, leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Oh, the men. Yeah, Bob is also, you know, he's into fitness and everything. So
Kirk should work people
dedicated.
Out. Kirk needs a site where you go to and you do a Kirk out instead of a workout.
Totally.
Because Kirk could make so much bank doing that for those who just want to sit there and eat and watch him do it. Because that's fun. That's fun too, you know. He does put people through their paces, you know, like he has a friend that they go work out and I'm like, you're so mean to him. He just what he puts himself through, you know, is not what I want to put Michael Waltz it for 10 minutes. It's like, get out of town. Oh, I'll be over here with this cat shaped donut. And maybe I'll do a wall sit for 30 seconds and then call everyone I know and tell them I worked out. It's just different.
Oh, Kirsten, you're just so sweet. You have such sweet energy.
It's the voice. It's just the voice. It's up here. People think you're sweet and then stab them in the back.
Yeah, you're such a backstabber.
I am. I'm a user.
Excuse me. All right. I'm going to end the show now. And before I let you go, I love to tell everybody, you know, where do we find you? Because I don't know where everybody's hanging out.
I'm everywhere, except I just am less there.
Okay.
Is what you'll notice. I'm both on Twitter. I won't call it X. My name, Kirsten Warren. And I got my blue check taken away and I haven't paid for the other one. So I'm the one. I'm that person. And then I'm on Threads. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on, you know, Instagram. You can pretty much find me just my name, Kirsten Warren, the real Kirsten Warren, I think, on Instagram. I'm not really sure. Like I said, I'm not on enough to where I even know my handles by
right.
heart, you know?
Well, and it's Kirsten, K-I-E-R-S-T-N. Yeah,
that's right.
So S-T-E-N. Sorry.
Lots of vowels. It's very Danish. K-I-E-R. Lots of vowels, but no umlauts. So that's it.
Well, it's always, always, always a pleasure to talk to you because you are just such a great person, interesting and fun. So we're looking forward to whatever's going to happen with your new venture. Fingers crossed.
Thank you.
And Scarlett's
Thank you. Right
amazing.
Back at you.
Thank you.
Right back at you. Call anytime with your podcast show or not. It was so much fun.
All right. Well, you take care.
Thank you. Love you too.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, dog parents, this one's for you. BarkBox and Super Chewer deliver themed toys and treats straight to your door every single month. And this month, it's a big one. The 420 BarkBox is back. It's Bark's most legendary box of the year, packed with hilarious weed-inspired toys and drool-worthy treats. And every year, it sells out. It's all good vibes and great toys, but you gotta act fast. Sign up now at bark.co to grab the dopest box of the year before it's gone.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.